All right, this is a meeting of the Colorado Voter Access and Modernized Elections Commission. The date is July 1st, 2013, 1 o'clock. We're meeting in the Aspen Room at the Secretary of State's office. First item on the agenda is open public comment. Is there anybody who wishes to make public comment? I have a real echo, Steve, is that right? Oh, okay. Anybody who wishes to make public comment? All right, the second, I guess I should state at the outset that everyone is present either here in the meeting room or on the phone. And our first item is the Freeman Kraft McGregor briefing. And I think that they're on the phone, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, and everyone on the commission should have received the preliminary report from Freeman Kraft. And is that posted on the website? And that is posted on the Secretary's website for anybody who wishes to follow along at home. Also, I should state that posted on the website last week is an updated version of Title I of the Election Code, and we've taken the changes from 1303 and other bills passed from the legislative session and incorporated them into Title I, and we have posted that online for anybody who's interested in seeing that is available. So moving to Freeman Kraft McGregor draft report, do you want to just start out by giving us an overview, Paul?
Yes. I hadn't actually prepared a statement. The approach to this report was to look at state system and compare that to be.
Are you on speaker?
I'm on speaker. Let me.
Yeah, we're just having a little trouble picking you up.
Okay, and I'm also getting a bad echo on this end.
Oh, okay. That's better.
Okay, is that better?
Yes.
Okay. All right, well, our approach to this, I'm still getting an echo. Okay, we will get through this. Our approach to this was to actually look at the system, the characteristics that it's got now, compare it to where it needs to be in order to handle the 2013-2014 elections. Within the system boundary, we considered procedures and policies to be part of the system. And that's kind of the approach. Our finding, I don't think anything startling came up. The largest risk and most important needs for 213 are the policy and procedure decisions, rulemaking and developing of uniform business processes. Probably the largest technical issue in 213 is providing connectivity and training to the lower population counties in the state who may not have used vote centers in the past and do not have a high level of information technology resources to work with. In 214, the obvious big risk is modifications to the score system to fully comply with the bill. The second highest risk in 214 is going to be the throughput, security, and backup to ensure that the system is available and operating through the period that the VSCPs are open. Policy decisions, planning will still be required for 214, but should certainly be nothing more than a review of those policies in light of the experience of the 2013 election. A couple of things that we caught that were surprising. We found nothing in the fiscal notes that funded any change to the required changes for the forms used in driver's license offices. That's an issue that needs to be addressed, and it may well be covered, but we just could find no evidence that it was. Also, in reviewing the fiscal note, There was an expectation, at least on the part of legislative staff, that the data transfers from vital records and from corrections would be increased to a daily basis close to the election. There was nothing in the bill that actually changed that. We're told from Department of State staff that currently there's no expectation of anything other than a monthly update from those agencies. So those were the two things that we found that were a little unexpected. Everything else in our report, I think most everybody in the room at least is aware of at this point.
All right. Has everyone on the commission had a chance to review the draft that was sent? Maybe we could just start by discussing any additional items any of the commissioners have that they'd like to see included, or any initial thoughts. Sort of open it up. Go ahead, Martha. It's your microphone.
Oh, okay, that's fine. I wanted to go back and look at the language of the bill, and I'll do that maybe while somebody else raises their own concerns. But in terms of the statement just now that the updates will still remain just monthly, I would like to understand, because I think it was the intent of the bill that those updates are more frequent than monthly, and to score. They'd be updated more frequently than monthly. And so I would like to hear from the Secretary's office, if there's anybody who can speak to that, about why they think that it doesn't require that.
Well, let me clarify a moment. I didn't say that the bill, that it's not required. There is nothing. Basically, the bill provides that the Secretary will enter into agreements with those other two agencies for that data. It doesn't provide for increasing the frequency. Although, when we looked at the fiscal note, clearly there was a perception in the legislative staff that there was going to be an increase in frequency.
Well, and then I'm sorry, this is Martha Tierney again, and I believe, Mr. Kraft, then you said that you heard from the Secretary's office that it would still only be done monthly, so...
Secretary of Staff, in response to a question whether that was going to be increased, basically said, as far as they know, there are no plans to increase it at this point.
Why don't we have Trevor speak to that? I know we've been trying to negotiate new agreements. I don't know where those stand.
My name is Trevor Timmons, CIO for the Secretary of State's office. We do expect that we will receive files more frequently from directions of the
environment. Thanks, Dave. I think he was even pointing that I should activate the mic. We do believe that we can receive those files and process them more frequently than we do currently. I think to Paul's point, I don't think that there was specific language within the bill. The cost to do that, we expect to be fairly minimal, because the cost to implement the interfaces where we receive them from those two agencies on a monthly basis were also fairly minimal. So we are expecting to increase the frequency. It is somewhat dependent on the capability of the agencies to actually implement that increased frequency, but we believe that SCORE can actually handle receiving those files more frequently.
Yeah, our understanding was SCORE was set up to receive those files nightly, but the issue is getting the other two agencies to send them on a greater frequency.
Okay, so, I'm sorry, this is Martha again. So I read the language of the bill in section 12302B to say that that data should be, that the Secretary should enter into agreements with the Department of Public Health and Environment and the Department of Corrections to access information to the extent required to enable the verification of the accuracy of the information. And so I would understand that to me to be daily, so that you could get accurate information every day during the period when people would be registering and voting, at least. Do you have a different interpretation of that?
No, I don't, personally. I mean, I think that we will implement changes. Well, the other agencies will implement changes to provide those files to us on a more accelerated basis. And incidentally, we have done this with those existing agencies currently. For example, with the Department of Corrections, they usually send an update on the first calendar day of any month. And that's been the practice going back several years. They have been amenable and have delivered updates on, say, the Monday right before Election Day, when that's not actually the first. And so I don't expect that that's going to be difficult for us to accomplish.
And so this is Martha again. Is it then the intent of the agreements that are in the process of being negotiated that they will seek to have data delivered daily?
I'm not quite sure if that's the way an individual agency would handle it. For example, Corrections, every month they send a file that contains the entire prior calendar year plus the calendar year to date of all of the death records that they maintain. I doubt that they would be interested in sending us a complete file that's with just a couple of daily records added, but I'd expect there'd be some other arrangement we'd work out with them. There's an attorney on the judge staff that has, he's actually the one that's been tasked with negotiating those interagency agreements with the three agencies that we do receive data from, and I believe that we'll work that out.
Yeah, and our comment was not indicating that it could not be worked out. Just that, as best we can determine at the moment, it's not specifically required in the statute and not in place.
Okay. Well, this is Martha again. So, I think it is required by the statute. That would be my interpretation of that language.
Go ahead.
From a purely procedural process, do we have assurances that these records will be updated the night before or morning of the election?
Again, this is Trevor Timmons, and I believe we will do that. Probably not the morning of, but the night before. Again, that's been a standard practice, especially with corrections records, where I know there may be some activity that takes place between the first of a calendar month and then the date that the election day actually falls on.
And we will have the ability to do real-time updates?
I do not believe that we will be integrated with corrections or public health and environment or a driver's license on a real-time basis. That is not the way it functions today. We receive data files from those agencies, apply them to SCORE, and that's, even as much as a day out of bounds, that's as close as we have ever achieved.
That would appear to present a problem if we're going to do same-day verifications of residency and eligibility to vote and name changes and other issues that we'll have to deal with if we can't be assured that we have real-time data.
Well, that issue and that risk will be that basically the person coming into the voting center and applying to register to vote today was earlier this morning incarcerated or became deceased.
So can you tell us...
Incarcerated, prosecuted, and convicted.
Right. But can you tell us precisely by what date prior to any given election that the records would be up to date?
I think they're up to date the night before.
But we're not going to have real time. And that's actually an issue that sort of pre-exists because we allow early voting. And it could be that you vote early and then 4 days later you are convicted of a felony, but your vote is still going to end up counting. So that's already, I guess you could call sort of a vulnerability that exists out there, or you could be deceased prior to the time that election day actually happens. So those kinds of things are built into the system now. We're not going to get same day real-time updates from these agencies.
However, the system currently segregates provisional ballots, and we have a cutoff prior to the election that gives some time to verify information. So I think that presents a new problem for resolution on this adaptations to the technology that we're using in the exchange of information.
Well, from what we saw in the fiscal notes and the plans, there doesn't appear to be funding intended to allow corrections and vital records to update their systems to the point that they would support a real-time inquiry against their databases.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is those agencies don't report in real time. So, you know, you don't get
right.
your death record as somebody, you know, passes away. You get it, you know, a week later. You don't get your felony record the moment that they're adjudicated in court. That happens, you know, down the road. So it's because those agencies don't report in real time that we're never going to get a report back in real time. But I think Michael can speak a little bit more about where we are on actually negotiating those agreements.
Yeah, so for those of you, excuse me, not in the room, my name is Michael Hagahara. I'm with the Secretary of State's Office, Voter Registration Manager. We have agreements with both Departments of Public Health and Corrections. And to the extent that the bill requires something new, would be, I guess, news to me here. I had conversations with City and County of Denver prior to the bill being drafted and introduced about the requirement that possibly health and public health and environment corrections would submit nightly updates to us, and suggested that language to specifically require that would be helpful in this case. And I don't know what happened after that. That was the most that we were involved with regards to kind of trying to move forward on that process. I do know that there probably would need to be some sort of resource allocation at those departments if this were going to happen. And I don't believe that any of them entered any, neither of them have a fiscal note for this. And so I'm not even sure if they would be able to come, you know, what our options would look like. And we could talk to them about renegotiating the agreements we currently have, but none of them are set to expire this year. And to the extent that this doesn't require something different, we could be hard-pressed to argue that the bill gives us reason to negotiate a new agreement.
So, can I say something quickly? This is an 11-page report. We have 3 hours to review it. Can we just review it from the start? I mean, we're weighing in all over the place. We're talking about negotiations that none of us are ever privy to. If we could just... I know you did a statement, but we didn't go through the content of the recommendations on any of the 11 pages, and I don't think it would waste any of our time to just go in order. Do you all agree, or do you disagree?
I think it would be helpful to go in order. However, when we're talking about omissions, and I think these are things that we wouldn't be going over, and I am concerned that we raise the probability of a legal challenge to something procedurally that's stated in the bill, whether or not it allocates funds or specifically requires a deadline for exchange of information, that we run a risk of legal challenges to our voting process if we are required to verify some of this data on the day of the election and we don't have current information.
Okay. Well, that being said, if we want to start at the introduction, I don't know if anybody has any comments about that. It seems to be a pretty much a restatement of the purpose in the legislative intent.
And I would just add, sorry to interrupt, but everybody's got notes from having gone through the document on their own. Can you just speak up when you have questions or comments about the language in the document. Is that okay to just kind of do that as we go through
yeah,
to give
fine.
Everyone a shot at getting their comments aired?
Does anyone have anything on the introduction? Okay. How about the executive summary?
This is Hillary Hall, and I have some questions on the second paragraph of the executive summary. Some of the conclusions made about the smaller population counties. Specifically, so the second sentence says, these counties have very limited information technology resources, which is true, and may not have used voter service polling centers in the past. Well, no one has used those in the past because they haven't existed, and what I'm curious about is, you know, what's meant by that comment?
That is a typo.
Oh, it's a typo. We
understood that some of them had not used voting centers under the prior law.
So I guess to make a clarification there is what do you see as the difference between a voter service and polling center and early voting? Because to us, those are extremely similar. And so even if they haven't used a vote center, which many counties have not, all counties have used early voting. So I would just want some clarification on that in this, because to me it seems a little misleading.
Right, and this is Elena. I think one of the early notes suggested that someone had said that vote centers were the closest comparison to the voter service and polling centers. But my understanding, like Hillary's, was that early vote was a more apt comparison. So it seems like it would make sense to revisit that both in the summary and in the narrative.
Okay, we can revisit it. But the point is, I think, as we understood it, that there were smaller counties that might be conducting early voting in their office and yet would not have had experience setting up a VSPC in a facility outside their office, and that they might be required to do so.
So I think it would be important to give context to that because it's based on the tiers. And when I hear you talk, it's like we're blending our very small counties with our medium-sized counties. And medium-sized counties, we already looked. There's a chart that we gave you that showed the medium-sized counties and how many early voting centers they were already required to do based on the primary bill and what they've done in the past election. And if you look at that, I think all except one, maybe two of the medium-sized counties have all had at least two, if not three, early voting locations, which Chaffee County is the one that comes to mind. They're going from two to three, but most of the medium-sized counties have set up external, and I feel it's an important point because when you read this, it's easy to make it sound like all the small counties because we're not making that distinction between tier one, two, and three. The tier ones, which are the very small counties and have even more limited IT resources, they're only required to have one, even including election day. And I just think it's an important point for those not as familiar with the content to get that distinction.
Okay. Well, the point we are trying to make here is if you have, as we understood you do, some very small counties that have not even a single full-time IT management person, for them there could be risk, and frankly something needs to be done to determine if that risk is real and you know, how many instances of that risk are out there and to address it.
I think that's a different point, and that would be great to make because I do think that's something to keep in mind is what are the IT resources for our very small counties and
yes.
how many of them rely on the state to help fill that gap.
And I think to right. Hillary's point, it would be helpful to include that chart, perhaps with the comparison to the early vote locations, because, again, when you read the report, it suggests that this is a totally new phenomenon, you know, operating these centers where voters can do these types of things. And I think having the context that it's not that much different from the current system for many of the small and medium counties would be a helpful set of information to include for the committees.
So, Paul, this is Suzanne. Do you think in this executive summary you could maybe make the distinction between 13 and 14, because I think there's a big difference in the elections in those 2 years. And then could you talk about that tier 1, 2, 3, because I think in 13 it's important to point out that we are going to operate essentially under the early voting system that's currently in place. And then in 14, the changes are going to be based upon tier 1, 2, 3, because my concern is,
well,
some people will stop.
We did try to do that. Basically, this paragraph that we are looking at right now addresses 2013.
Okay.
And then when you go to page 2, the first full paragraph there starts addressing the 2014. So we can perhaps separate those with some headers and relate
yeah.
the language to make that clear.
I think that would be helpful.
This is Fran Long. Yes, I totally agree. The smaller counties already operate with one early voting site, and I see no changes there, and they're very comfortable with what they've been doing for quite some time now.
So, yeah, maybe some headers might help that out.
Okay.
This is Cindy Agree. Did you consider the use of any type of cell phone technology to help mitigate some of the deficiencies in Internet access in some of these rural small counties?
No, as we discussed at our initial scope, our task here is not to tell you how to solve these problems. Cell phones is, I think, a very workable solution, but we try to keep our focus to laying out what the issues are that need to be addressed rather than going off into prescribing ways to address them.
Anything else on the summary?
So I had a question. This is Elena. On page 3, the first full paragraph talking about the needs and the changes to SCORE, the second to the last sentence talks about the capacity of the Department of State and how they'll be moving forward with implementation for 13 at the same time that they'll be planning for 14. And the conclusion is that that's a risk. Is that a risk? Is there a concern that there isn't sufficient capacity to address those two simultaneous processes, and then that's why it's in here, or is it just that it's an acknowledgement of the fact that there are two processes that must be going on?
It's an acknowledgement that there are two processes, and those two processes being managed concurrently are going to be a risk and a stress on staff. There's nothing to indicate that it can't be addressed, but quite frankly, I think nearly half of the appropriation was to provide personnel and consultant resources the department doesn't actually have right now. So this is a risk that they will probably be able to address. I don't see any reason why not, but I think it needs to be pointed out. You're running, basically, for 213, you're running an extremely short development cycle on some things that aren't that hard to do technically, but making the decision how they are to be done and getting it done and testing it and training users to deal with it poses quite a risk. And that's going to take a good bit of energy. In 2014, you're dealing with managing a major project, going through the system and overhauling it. And basically, one IT shop's going to be dealing with both of those. So it's a risk.
Thank you. This is Hillary. Related to that, did you all, so the primary is conducted similar to the coordinated, at least as far as a number of required centers and whatnot. Was there a discussion as to, again, I get the advantage of implementing before the primary, but you're weighing the risk of that with development time and actually implementing the new system after the primary to give more time for development. Was that considered as part of the assessment, or was it already made the assumption that it would be all the new development for 2014 would be completed before the primary?
Our assumption, which we stated in the report, and which is the position of the CIO, is we got from his interview and also some of his input to the Legislative Budgeting Committee was that this was required to be up and running for the primary in 2014, and accordingly all changes needed to be implemented before April 24th or 25th of 2014.
And I'm sorry, again, that's based on the budget the year that the funding is available, or what was that based on? I missed that, sorry.
Well, it's based on reading the bill, and it's based on an interview with the CIO. It's based kind of in what we saw in the fiscal notes. It seems that everyone that we spoke to and everything we read was consistent with it being ready for the entire 2014 election cycle.
I'm not sure I agree with that conclusion, especially because of our take was always the primary and the coordinated were pretty similar and could be run in a similar fashion. And I guess I would just like to offer that as something for us to visit, the pressing to get it done by April 25th. Are there options to actually, I mean, again, there's advantages, right? You get to try it in a much smaller election with a much smaller turnout. But if that forces us to rush on development, where if we had a little more time, we could be more successful, because again, the volume, it won't be presidential, and we did implement SCORE in a presidential year, so it should be less.
Yeah, and you can argue it either way. I mean, you can do a better job of designing and pre-testing, rolling it out in November, but at the same time, you're going into a major election with something that hasn't been used before. If you can get it up and going in time for your primary, you can actually look at throughput system processes, perhaps see weaknesses where you're running a lower volume election and address them. And that's a policy decision for the commission and the department to talk about.
This is Elena. So then to follow up, would it make sense in the report to acknowledge that there could be two timelines depending on whether it were implemented for the primary versus the general? And to dig into that a little bit about the benefits or risks, because it seems like this assumes it has to be done by the primary, but once you and Hillary talked, it sounds like maybe that's not the case.
Well, we'll be glad to introduce that in the report. Okay.
Anything else on that section? All right. We move to scope and methodology. Nothing? No comments? But description of current systems. Looks like the first page is mostly a list, but as we get to the diagram in the third page, there's some conclusions about SCORE.
So one thing in the diagram, this is Hillary again, with the voter registration, and maybe it was obvious, it took me a minute to read it, but where it says corrections, I'm assuming that means the, like,
Department of.
Right. Okay. Just.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Vital records.
Okay. Vital records is Department of Health.
Yeah. Department of Health. Versus corrections. Okay. The rest.
And basically that description is paraphrased out of the department's description of the system in an RFP they recently issued. With, of everything we reviewed was the most succinct and basically matched everything we observed and everything we discussed with staff.
Great, thanks.
This is Rick Matsumoto. I think this question is actually more for Trevor, but when you talk about how the current system is taking updates, and you typically do one the night before the election day, can you talk more about the update process? And would it be exactly the same process that you would adopt to support 1303?
Sure. And so you're talking about updates of data that's actually used in verifying eligibility
right,
of individual voters.
Sources.
Right. So the updates that do take place on a daily basis, you know, day in and day out, are updates to driver's license information, that's used by the system to verify driver's licenses as well as state IDs. That includes data of new applications as well as the signature images from folks who are newly being issued a credential by Department of Revenue. And then we have, again, we have updated death records very close to Election Day and felon records very close to Election Day in past elections. So those are the daily updates that we would do right before an election.
And are these files coming into you via secure FTP, or and then you're doing a batch process that runs overnight?
Exactly. So we receive the files. They generally come in the morning between 2 and 3 a.m. in the morning, and then they get processed within. It doesn't actually take that long to process the files.
And so you would do the same thing for the 30 days prior to an election under 1303?
Yes, I believe so.
So there's enough window to handle that?
Yeah, we believe so.
So the issue is really whether these three sources can produce the data.
Yes, I think the limitation is more on the on the other side in terms of producing that information, just because of the way that it's collected on their side. We could not speak to how other agencies, the efficiency of their processes for delivering a file to us on a monthly basis with respect to corrections and public health and environment. Clearly, the Department of Revenue and the vendor for their system, they are able to provide those updates and new records on a daily basis because they're producing that today. We haven't seen that from corrections and public health and environment. And so, as I spoke to earlier, we'll have to work with them to see what frequency they can actually meet.
What frequency are they on today?
Right now, it's monthly for both of those agencies.
Thank you.
Sure.
Go ahead. This is Martha. I had a question about the description of current systems, where there's a list of the things that SCORE was designed to do in terms of complying with PAVA. And it seems to me there's one critical piece missing there. It's the number one point that HAVA was passed for, and that's to ensure that every eligible voter has the opportunity to vote. So I'd like to make a suggestion that be added to that list.
We can add that if the commission wishes. This basically was a description taken from the system documentation. I think probably you could argue that the entire system was implemented for that.
It seems like it would be a helpful thing to include.
Okay.
So I have a few, this is Elena, I have a few comments on page 6. The paragraph that starts SCORE was not designed to handle same-day registration and voting, it seems like that's somewhat inaccurate. It wasn't designed to handle it, but it has the capability with modifications to do so. So it seems like it might be more accurate to say that it was as designed was not intended, or it was designed not designed to process same-day registration, or something that acknowledges that SCORE has the capability. It just wasn't, that functionality was not built in at the time. Because when I read the sentence, I read it as SCORE can't do it, and based on the conversation we're having about the changes that can be made to SCORE, it seems like it is capable of doing it with modification.
It's capable of doing it with modifications, but the original design did not anticipate it.
Well, and it could say that. It was not, there was, the law didn't contemplate same-day registration. I just think that handle suggests that the system is incapable of being adapted to handle the load, and I'm concerned that it overstates the status quo.
Okay, well, our thought was basically that the fact that it wasn't designed to handle it is kind of the baseline reason that it needs to be modified.
Right. So maybe process instead of handle, which would acknowledge the need for additional adaptation, but also acknowledge that with that modification, it's able to do the job that it needs to.
Related to that, this is Hillary. It also doesn't acknowledge the fact that we actually do emergency registrations now, which are same-day voter registrations, and we do those all the way through early voting, including Election Day currently. Those are for people mm-hmm. in laws. It's required that if they had an issue with their registration, you can register them there on the spot. And so I think that's worth noting that the system does handle it, although we can make that more efficient and easier. And
okay.
That would be great for that part.
I have a little more. At the end of the paragraph, there's a discussion about the 29-day voter registration deadline and how there were 29 mm-hmm. days to receive updates and determine eligibility. I don't think that's accurate, given that once a voter is registered, assuming that there wasn't some limitation on their registration, they could vote early or through a mail ballot, and they would be voting a regular ballot. So it's not true that it's 29 days. It's at the time that their registration is processed, their information is checked against the records that are available. And if they vote before Election Day, they may well vote a regular ballot, as the Deputy Secretary said, even if they then show up on the felon list or the death records or something like that after that point.
Okay, now our point here is that in the past, these delayed file updates are not as severe or as important because of the 29 days. Would you say then that that is incorrect?
Yes, I think that the statement is overstated, given that a registration processed at the deadline for a voter who then voted early or through mail balloting, it's not that their eligibility hangs in limbo for those 29 days while they're is a possibility that they could then become ineligible or something like that. So I think it overstates the value of the 29 days, although it is true that if, information were to come up, that could be used to flag their record.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I would soften the point. I just don't think it's as black okay. and white as it's stated.
How would you suggest amending it?
I don't know. I'd have to think about that. I could play with it and send some language.
Yeah. And Stephen does have a Word file, and it would be very helpful if y'all could provide us comments and suggested edits in track changes mode.
Yeah, I would suggest if you're going to take a stab at that paragraph, also that we do address changes up until that point, too. And so I think it is that it makes it sound like it works now. And
right, we're introducing new.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that also goes for the third full paragraph on that sentence, the design of the voter registration system, because we do address changes up to and including Election Day. We won't mail out after, currently it's the Tuesday, the new bill, it's the Monday before the election, but online voter registration.
Now, this is the online.
Yeah, sorry. It's the same issue, just a different system.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Except no emergency voting, obviously, with the online voter registration system.
Right.
This is Cindy Agreek, and this may be a question for one of the commissioners. Are current emergency registration ballots segregated?
No, they vote a regular ballot.
And then do we have to have any type of certification of printers that print ballots on demand? Is there any requirement anywhere like we do with voting machines?
No.
Do we
not
know?
Currently, I don't think.
Not to my knowledge. I know that we have ours as part of HART, and that was certified as part of the whole system a long time ago. So it wasn't like that part was specifically certified.
My thought was if we're using more printers to do ballots on demand, is there are there any type of regs requiring certification of those machines?
Not yet. That'll be something that you may hear about July 8th when we do a rules update. That is one thing that we're looking at in the rules, but we don't yet have a system in place. Once we do, it will not likely be a certification, but rather a list of requirements and auditing functions and that sort of thing.
I have others on that area, but I wanted to see if there was anything else on the page before that.
Did you have more on before we get to ballot on demand printers?
Yeah, one thing, and this is Martha. I'm back to the updating just to make sure that I raised the issue that Mr. Hagahara was talking about, and I apologize that he's not here anymore to respond to it. But he says he doesn't think the bill requires them to do that, and the bill says at the earliest practical time, the Secretary of State shall enter into agreements to the extent required to enable the verification of the information. So I'm not sure I understand why that doesn't require agreements to implement the bill. If you can, that'd be great. Because I think, so as it applies to this report, I think the report is stating what the consultant has apparently heard from the Secretary's office, and I'm confused because I think that's different from what the bill contains.
So I think if the language in the legislation would have said there must be a nightly update of blah, 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 and that should be recorded by an MOU between the Secretary's office and the appropriate departments, we would have absolutely seen that as an obligation under the bill. But as it is, that's not what the bill says. I mean, the bill says, you know, it has language which suggests that data should be exchanged, but we already exchanged data. And so it certainly didn't indicate that there needed to be a more frequent exchange of data. That's not stated in the bill. We have, you know, had preliminary discussions with the agencies. The agencies in question specifically chose not to request funding for to make this change, and when we were going through the process of determining how much each one of these things was going to cost, we communicated with the agencies and we asked them, well, are you doing a fiscal note on this to increase the frequency of this, that, and the other thing? And they said, no, that's not what the bill requires. And we went back and looked at it and said, well, I guess that's not what the bill requires. And sure enough, that's not what the language requires. The language does not require that they do a nightly upload or that they do even a weekly upload. It just says that they have to exchange this data. And so we already have those agreements in place. We already have MOUs with all these departments and agencies. And so we're continuing with the current landscape.
So, Martha, my question to you then would be, what you're saying is the bill actually says you need to facilitate the passage of the bill and update the data in an adequate way, and what you're saying is, no, we don't.
I'm saying we already do.
What I'm saying is that the legislation doesn't say that it has to be done nightly, and we would be.
I know it doesn't say it has to be done
or
nightly.
Whenever. I mean, it doesn't.
It has to facilitate an adequate matching of the data under the new law that enables the Secretary of State to be able to.
And we're prepared to do that today. We can do daily uploads of all of that data, every single one of it. But these agencies currently don't and probably can't. And when specifically asked if they were going to do a fiscal note to facilitate that, they said, no, we're not, because that's not what the bill said. So it's not our job to make them do something that they're not obligated to do under the bill.
This is Elena. It seems like, though, it might be the commission's job. If the report says that it is necessary to get the information more frequently to close that gap, which is what the report as drafted says, and the legislation says that they need to do it to the extent required to enable the verification of the accuracy of the information, then in order to meet what the statute says, we would need to get the information more frequently. So maybe it'd be helpful to know what would it require from those agencies, because if a supplemental appropriation is required or if additional legislation next year, what have you, that would be the next step, because I agree with Martha and others. I think it's quite clear that the current monthly update isn't enough required to enable the verification of the accuracy of the information provided on the application. So maybe the report is the tool to help those agencies revisit that question of whether or not they're required to comply.
And that would be fine. We stand ready to do this. It's just a matter of, you know, getting the willpower on the other side to and the money, because frankly, many of these systems are extraordinarily antiquated. You have really no idea how antiquated some of the systems are in the various government agencies. And so, for instance, we did a literally two or three line change, word change. It wasn't even a development change. It was just words being changed on what's called the tall and skinny, which is the printout that comes with a change done at the Department of Revenue. To do that little change cost tens of thousands of dollars to change a couple of words because of the development necessary, and the agency in question had very limited resources on the development side, and they were obligated to use this very old development language, which only, you know, five people in the United States of America could even, you know, do development in. And so I fully anticipate that there would be a significant fiscal note associated with that kind of upgrade to the exchange of data. And when they opted out of the fiscal note process, that alerted us very quickly that we weren't going to get that data in any more frequent a fashion than we currently do.
The fiscal note did contemplate that the Secretary's office thought it would be nightly, correct?
We were prepared to do it. We are prepared to do it now. In fact, there is no fiscal impact. I'm looking over at Trevor. There is no fiscal impact for us to do that nightly, because we just write the query and pull the information nightly. It would take, you know, Kathy and Trent, you know, an afternoon to do it.
And is it my understanding then that no new agreements have been discussed? And so is it the Secretary's position that no new agreements are needed under the bill?
Currently, with the language as it is, and with, you know, no larger voice from the Commission, we see no need to go forward with any additional agreements.
And so the Secretary's office reads the language, to the extent required to enable the verification of the accuracy of the information provided on applications for voter registration, to be monthly is okay.
Well, as the Commission has pointed out, Hillary and others have pointed out, we do emergency registration right now, and emergency registration doesn't require this DOC and CDPHE examination. So, under our current regime, we already do this, and the data that we use is the data that we receive on a monthly basis, and then, as Trevor pointed out, we usually get an update right near the election from both of these agencies. So they are able to do more frequent. I mean, maybe they could systematize it to do on a nightly basis or on a weekly basis or on a biweekly basis. But currently they don't. Currently we just get it monthly.
So could the Commission ask the Secretary to engage those agencies and try to negotiate, see what they would be willing to do?
I'm happy to do that.
In terms of more frequent updates?
Happy to do that. And happy to do that. Happy to get Michael involved on that. I think when we originally engaged with CDPHE and Department of Corrections and asked them why they didn't have a fiscal note, it became very clear to us very quickly that they didn't read it that way, and there was really no reason to go forward with that discussion. We're happy to try to engage them on that point, but I know exactly what they'll say. We don't have the money. We don't have the resources. And so then we're back to, well, can we implement legislation next year or have a supplemental? But this doesn't really fit the criteria of a supplemental. So it would probably require additional legislation with funding.
Well, I'm not so sure that's the case, given that depending on if the Commission agrees that there are actually requirements, that this language in 12302B, which is all brand new, actually means something, that maybe it is an appropriate supplemental item, that it was missed, that it doesn't require additional language, that there is an obligation in B that was missed by those agencies, and so they say, oops, we need this.
So that's great, and if we want to go that way and you can get funding through the JBC, that's fine. I'm guessing that at this late date, the agency is going to say that's not possible for this election cycle. and then we're back into the, we have to get it prepared for the primary, or we have to get it prepared for the next year's general, dependent upon what kind of development process they have and how difficult that is and what resources they have and their timelines, and also things that are already queued. Because one of the things that we experienced in this particular process was that 1303 was not the only piece of legislation that came through this last cycle. We had a number of pieces of legislation that required specific dates of start, and many of them had IT requirements. So, for instance, we had the 16-year-old registration. 16-year-old registration is a January 1 implementation date, which meant that we had to queue that up, and that was, you know, something that had to meet a specific date. Well, 1303 said immediately, even though it was impossible to do immediately. So there was, and there were other pieces of legislation as well that were in that situation, and a lot of stuff that was on the business side, all of which was sort of using the same staff. You know, we were sort of duplicating services based on the staff that we already had. And yes, it's true, we have people that can do that work. It's just that they're already committed to doing the other work that they're required to do to meet this other statute. So they may very well be in that same situation, in which case they may not be able to get it done. We can certainly engage in the conversation, though.
Would you do that, please?
Absolutely.
And I'm wondering if there isn't, if I'm clear, then that means Secretary of State's office is all set to go, but they anticipate real problems getting data because of the attitude of those departments and their unwillingness to change to cooperate with the language as you read it.
So I would just say that those are your words, not mine. No. I have relationships with those agencies, and they're friends of mine.
I'm just saying that if it is, if there's an option, and it could be funding that they need or a different timeline, if there's a way to get them to come to a nightly or just almost as real time as possible, we should be able to hear them out and understand what those limitations are in their opinion.
You know,
is that
perhaps
a better way of saying that?
Perhaps you could invite them
and
to
so
come here.
I was going to say, if we could engage them here in the public setting where we have a chance to hear from them or ask them our questions, or would that be a bad idea or a good idea? It seems to me like this is going to be a real hinge pin, and so a real obstacle. And if they're just kind of, if they've said no because they have a different understanding of the law than some of us do, maybe we need to see if we can't get closer to an agreement that provides the data on a timely basis.
That's fine. And I'll just point out, I know Michael sort of alluded to this, when we received the bill on a Friday night, I think like April 7th or so, by Monday morning or Tuesday morning, we had already figured that this was an issue, and we were in discussions with Denver and the Denver office and some of the managers over at the Denver office, because we knew from our discussions that they had, you know, they were very closely aligned with the bill, and pointed out this problem immediately, just never went further than that. And we talked to some of the legislators that were involved in the bill pretty extensively, and in fact, I think this may have been one of the things that was considered for an amendment, and it just never came to being. So, but obviously, if you want to invite the agencies to come up here and try to address it in particular, that's perfectly fine.
Judd, were the people at the agencies, were they employees of the agency or of OIT?
Good question. I suspect there are agencies. I didn't have this conversation with them, so I wasn't privy to it.
So, Mark, this is Angela on the.
I'll follow up with Judd.
Yeah.
Just in case they were on my team. But I can't believe they missed an opportunity to get more money.
That's right. It is a baffler, isn't it? I'm sorry, Senator.
Just a quick one. I would think it would be really helpful to be able to have them come and be able to tell us in a public forum some of the issues that they would have, since the Secretary of State's office is willing to go forward, but that's where the problem seems to be in some of the departments. And I certainly wasn't approached, and I don't know if there, the sponsors in the House were approached, if there were some issues. So I guess I'd like to hear from the department.
Great.
This is Cindy Acree. My only question to the department is, in the bill it specifically states, and I can't find it specifically on the site, that the voter registration rolls have to be submitted to the election judges one day before. So I assume that's coming from the county clerk's offices, and that you have the capability to make sure that those are updated up to that one day prior. Is that correct?
So let me rephrase what you said, and you tell me if I got it right. The Secretary of State's office maintains the SCORE database. And the SCORE database will be updated, is updated in real time, all the time. So there are constantly people working in it. It's constantly being updated. That's why, actually, one of the reasons people ask for a copy of the database, well, it's always moving. It's never exactly, you know, the same database. It changes from moment to moment. But one of the things that we're working on are rules associated with 1303, and 1303 likely will require us to put in rules that will tell the counties that they have to have certain things processed by a certain timeline. There are already statutory obligations for 72-hour turnaround and for 24 and 48-hour turnaround on certain things. Under this particular circumstance, I think we're going to have to require that the counties finalize their list within a given amount of hours, you know, who knows what that is, but a very quick turnaround so that they can create their poll book for election day. So those people that could come in and vote on election day who are at the time registered to vote who have not previously voted. So, which is sort of a moving target because hypothetically all those people have ballots. So they've already received a ballot in the mail, but they haven't voted it yet. So one of the things that is very likely to be an obligation is that the counties will have to bink in, so bink being a very technical term, for logging in through a scanner the ballots as they come in, so that we know that somebody's ballot's been received so they don't show up on a poll book that would be accessible on election day. So there's always that kind of processing of data that occurs right before an election so that you get as clean of an e-poll book as you possibly can for election day. Did that answer your question?
Well, it did in a legalese kind of way.
Sorry.
So just the basic language, can the department right now with the processes they have in place with the counties the day before the election provide an updated, totally updated registration list?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
It's actually already done. That's what we already do.
Thank you so much for clarifying all that, by the way.
Are we ready for our next topic?
Yep. So back to the initial draft report. This is Hillary. And the paragraph at the bottom of the page, it says, another enhancement to SCORE will allow ballot-on-demand printers to be activated by clicking a print ballot button. That's I'd have to ask a question. Could you tell me what that means? Because the way it sounds like our ballot on demand works through SCORE, and that's not actually accurate. So I want this paragraph to reflect that, but I might be misinterpreting what you've written there. But when I read it, it sounds like that's how that works. And
as we understand it, this is a function that they are currently rolling out, which will be available for the mock election. And basically, as I understand, the design SCORE can be networked so that it sends a packet or text string to the ballot on demand subsystem and actually prints out the ballot on demand ballot.
And would that be with the Runbeck system? So that's
different. That I do not know. I understand.
Counties that have their own ballot on demand system.
Right. This is designed, as I understand it, to interface with your existing ballot on demand systems.
All systems?
So can I speak to that?
Sure.
So the secretary in the uniform voting system process has awarded state contract to Runbeck to be the ballot on demand printer for the state. And so that is the uniform voting system that does ballot on demand process. So we have done development in SCORE to facilitate the use of the Runbeck ballot on demand system, and including this button, which is now in UAT. So it'll roll out in the next 2 weeks. I think it'll be functional very quickly. And it's for the Runbeck system. It's not for any other ballot on demand system. If you have another ballot on demand system, which is not a Runbeck system, it's not going to work. Unless, of course, the language works the same, and I doubt that it does. So for Runbeck, it will work.
Okay, and we will clarify that in revision of the report.
Yeah, and I think the piece that the counties were speaking to was the ability through the early voting module to allow for issuing paper when someone chose not to vote their mail ballot, which is the minimum requirement that would allow all systems to properly track in the voter registration if someone was going to vote in person or use the DRE, and that's something that would still be needed so that you could show where the voter went. It would void their mail ballot and then issue them a paper ballot. It sounds like that's a great improvement to add some automated processing, but still need the distinction. And I'm happy to take a look at it again, too, when we get there. So. Thanks.
Anything else on this section? All right. Needs for the 2013 election.
This is Elena. I have a question. Paragraph 2, it talks about technical changes that need to be made to Citrix and how the business practice or the business processes have to be in place first. And I don't know if this is a question for the department or for Mr. Kraft, but what is the timeline required to make those changes to the Citrix modules? Like, how long does the business process subgroup have to come up with a process that the commission can review and adopt before the fall election?
I think that's a Trevor question.
Thank you again, Trevor Timmons from the Secretary of State's office. So there are two ways in which the SCORE system is utilized today. Early voting, any non-election day activity is actually run through some technology called Citrix. And then on election day in vote center counties, it's actually just a secure web application that doesn't require additional infrastructure or licensing such as Citrix. In our fiscal note, we actually did not submit a proposal to actually add additional licenses or infrastructure to SCORE to deliver service centers, voting service centers and polling locations via Citrix for a couple of reasons. The existing core of the SCORE system is actually built on a .NET an older version of Microsoft's .NET framework. The core pieces of the application are actually over 6 years old at this point. So we believe, and we've actually already, even prior to 1303 being introduced, we've been doing some prototyping work on actually moving the early voting module into a secure web-based application that doesn't require the use of Citrix, okay? This is how most people are actually designing web-based applications today. So the core Citrix technology is kind of old, okay? The second piece is trying to beef up the infrastructure and purchase the user licenses to use this old technology for a new way of conducting elections did not seem like a very good investment to us. I'll give you one example. Some of you may have heard about the system called the CBMS system that's in use in Colorado. was originally deployed using Citrix as that core technology for providing access to users across the state. They've just recently, within the past several, well, I think within the last year, they've actually moved most of the functionality of CBMS away from Citrix and to a secure web-based application. I know that the governor's office of IT is submitting quarterly reports and meeting, I think, every quarter with the Joint Budget Committee. I believe that the results of that transition, that technology transition, have been very well received, both by county users of the system as well as by the state folks that have to assist in administering, you know, that central system. That's just an example of a very large, you know, state-facing system that has moved away from Citrix and to secure web-based applications. We did not believe that moving forward with Citrix was actually a prudent investment. Is that responsive to your question?
It's helpful, but I have another question then.
Sure,
so please. The report talks about having to make technical changes to Citrix for the 2013 election. So does that mean it's smaller scale and then the 2014 or beyond would be more advanced? And how quickly can those changes be made, those technical changes to Citrix be made that are referenced in the report?
Well, I believe that's part of why we wanted that needs assessment report, so we can actually develop the business requirements, exactly what needs to be in place to run the 2013 elections using the existing SCORE technology with some minor changes. Again, based on the county feedback, I believe that several of the counties have done some testing of using the existing system, I believe mostly the early voting module, to actually run an election with same-day registration, election day registration. Based on that, which we heard from the counties during, you know, while the bill was moving through the through both houses, that was our idea. That was our approach to this, is that we wouldn't have one project to upgrade Citrix or just to totally replace Citrix with a secure web application, but we'd actually have two projects. We would make whatever changes were required, and honestly, I don't know what those changes are. I think that's one of the findings we would hope would come out of the Kraft report, identify the changes that need to be made, you know, bare minimum, so we can run, you know, legally compliant elections this year, but then actually set us up long term for actually a more elegant and efficient solution. So I don't know exactly what those changes are.
Right, and the idea is that those would come out of the subgroup right now that's looking at the practices and the modifications. But from your sense, knowing kind of the direction the counties have taken and the conversations that have been had, how quickly, from a development standpoint, do the changes to Citrix need to start to move, knowing that there are elections in November? What's the timing to implement those?
Well, I think that really depends on how many changes are absolutely required. And I don't know what those are. I don't know if there's, you know, so I've heard the, you know, we need to enable one button so we can allow someone to vote in person right there instead of push a button that says I'm issuing them a mail ballot that they're just carrying and voting instead of like voting on a DRE. Mm-hmm. Okay. If that was the only change, that's probably not huge. If there are other changes to implement other things required under the bill, such as, you know, working with corrections and public health and environment so they can provide daily information and we have to do something to help them do that, well, that might be more significant.
Okay. Thank you.
And our perspective is that the changes that we've discussed with the staff and based on the needs that we understand from our dealings with the counties is that those Citrix changes were what was necessary. Those would be relatively minor to implement, but before the department could commit resources to developing and testing and rolling out those changes, it's really important that they know what the decision on the business process and the VSPCs is going to be, which is why we made that, you know, the highest priority item.
So this is Cindy Agri, and my question goes to expand on what you just mentioned. Have you or will you identify through this specific needs assessment the requirements for changes in the Citrix system to accommodate the statutory requirements?
immediately?
Everything that we have identified as a statutory requirement has been shown as a need fulfilled or unfulfilled in the spreadsheet that supports this report, and we've tried to touch in the narrative on all of the important ones. But once again, I can't tell you what the needs are for the changes in the Citrix modules till you tell me what the business module is. You can't identify changes to a system that need to be made until you know what it is that you want the system to do. And while the statutory changes are very specific, they leave a lot of room as to exactly how the task is going to be done. And that's the business process that needs to be developed. Now, fortunately, I think there are people moving ahead rapidly on the business process.
Yeah, there are. We just had our conference. This is Hillary. We had our conference last week, and again, we need to work with the Secretary of State's office to see that we have the same picture. But from the county's perspective, we're close. Our meeting on the 3rd, we're going to review the models that we went over, which were all pretty similar, and align on that with the goal to get some conversation going, hopefully on our meeting on the 8th, with the final on the 15th is what we're looking at. I don't know. Again, we have some people who are out of town, so that's why we wanted to have our final on the 15th, but I'm not sure if now's the appropriate time to talk about that, or it's kind of an agenda item as well. So.
This is Bob Rankin. I have a question relative to that. Hello, is somebody else talking at the same time?
No, go ahead.
Well, my question relative to that business model process, which is emerging as being very critical, is do we have a process, or I think that we should have a process in place to have all 64 counties the opportunity to review the process and tell us, I mean, we have people moving from, we've admitted, some inconsistent processes to one that is consistent, and they would have varying degrees of difficulty as they make that transition. I just wonder if we have some time or a process built in to get a review from the counties who might not be able to participate directly in this subcommittee.
We do not have such a process in place right now. We've done it through representation through the association. We discussed it at conference. We had probably over 50 of the 64 counties there. And again, with the timing, I would be curious what the commission recommends as far as that, a process for that.
This is Elena. I mean, it seems to me if we could have a draft process that comes out in the next week or so, if we're not going to finalize it till the 15th when the rest of the committee can be at the meeting, it'd be worthwhile if we can post it to invite comment, whether it's from clerks or others in the community, just to get feedback on it, and then we can adapt if need be. So I think that that seems worth doing if we can figure out how.
What I would like to do is bring the initial draft to the commission on the 8th, have some conversation here, post it, and then I mean, between the 3rd and the 8th doesn't seem like the ideal time for comments. So, I mean, we can post it when we have that recommendation, but and then maybe from the 8th through the, give it through that Thursday or Friday, and then look at something to wrap up for the 15th. How does that timeline sound to the other commissioners?
Sounds good.
Bob Rankin again. Sounds good to me. Maybe we could put a sentence in this report that indicates our approach.
Yeah, my.
I didn't quite understand that. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Representative Rankin.
What I was saying, Mr. Kraft, was that maybe we could add the second paragraph, which was just indicates we're going to post the results of the business practice model and ask for comments back.
Okay.
And my hope would be that we would
have that finalized on the 15th with the report. It may not be included as part of it, but my hope would be that we'd have that finalized as both the commission and the business practice group, so that then any programming that was required based on it could begin or continue.
That's great. Which is a little hard without the rules, but we still move forward.
Anything else on this section, on the needs for 2013?
This is Bob Rankin again. I had a comment down on the less urgent on that FAR. Actually, I think training is urgent myself, but we've talked about county users being trained, and we talk about the mock election, but there's two problems from my perspective. One, the mock election won't have all the suffrage. Secondly, very importantly, I think that there are going to be people operating on election day who will not be involved in the mock election, and I think we should make at least a there that it's important to include the volunteer judges and election workers, anybody who will be using the system, in some sort of a training cycle.
And that may be something that's addressed by rule. It's not really something we can fix in the mock election, because although we're mandating counties participate, counties don't really have any control over who their election judges are going to be 6 months out, since these are generally appointed by the parties or temporary workers. So those issues, I think there are going to be some rules, and again, we'll hear a little bit about that on the 8th when we have our presentation on sort of the categories that we'll be doing rulemaking, and can get some comments back at that point. Anything else on this section? And we're up to needs for 2014.
Wait, I have one. Sorry, I've got stuff on page 8.
Go ahead, yeah. Martha.
I had a question on paragraph 3 on page 7. There's a statement, several areas in the Act appear to be vague or in conflict with each other. I wanted to get some more feedback about what you mean by that, where that's coming from. I'm not sure that we as a commission want that in our report.
Well, that is basically from the U.S. staff who are working on developing rules and analyzing the bill. I noted some things as I went through that were vague or unclear. A good example, which we've beat to death earlier, is the language as to the responsibilities for bringing in data from vital records and corrections. That's an area that I think is vague or unclear. So we were referring in general to those kinds of things without going into itemizing them. We think there is a need, though, to complete the analysis that the department is doing on those issues and get rules issued and get, you know, any corrective legislation that's required drafted and into the legislative process.
This is Elena. I would agree with Martha. I think having not seen the analysis, I'm not comfortable saying that I, you know, agree with it. But if we were to strike the sentence that starts several areas and just maintain the following sentence, which says the division's tasks include identifying items that can be clarified through rulemaking, that point would still remain without us making a premature conclusion that we may not all agree on.
Or we could amend the language to indicate that's the Secretary of State staff position on it, which again we'll hear more about on the 8th when we get a look at the different rules, but I think that's certainly been our position and was, I think, noted during the time the legislation was going through, that we had several amendments that we desired to make that were technical in nature to fix cleanups, and so I think that was probably something that was heard again and again from anybody working on the rulemaking process.
Well,
my concern, this is Martha, my concern is that, you know, there's the elephant in the room here. That, yes, this was a very contentious battle. The Secretary's office opposed it vehemently. The Clerk's office supported it overwhelmingly. So you've got in here a statement from the Secretary's office about how bad it is. I say we either take that out or we put another statement in from the clerks about how great it is.
Well, that's fine. If the clerks want to go on record that the bill is perfect and it doesn't need any changes, then they should go on record saying that. But I don't support censoring the report to take out statements from our professional staff who have looked at and analyzed this bill.
Right, but we haven't seen those analyses. Some of the amendments were introduced, but many were not. So references to technical amendments, there hasn't been a public vetting of those issues. And until we have it, it seems premature to make any kind of acknowledgement that says that it's not.
Well, I'd be glad to attribute the statement to DOS staff, if that gives anyone any comfort. But, I mean, I don't think you can deny that you need attorneys to go through a bill and make sure that, in fact, anything that's vague or has a conflict is basically flagged and noted and decisions be made about appropriate steps to deal with that. Because at the end of the elections, if you wind up in an election contest or you get sued for, by a voter over their rights in the process, you don't really want vague or undefined things laying out there. So it makes perfect sense to me that that's just a basic requirement, is to walk through the bill, look for those areas of weakness, and propose solutions.
This is Martha again. I don't disagree with that, but I think that as you saw here today, two attorneys can agree on what some language means. And so I oppose having a statement like that in this report unless we either have a counter statement or we just take it out. I mean, it's opinion. And
I'll be glad to attribute it as an opinion and include the opposing opinion and credit it as well.
This is Cindy Acree. I also think it's important, based on having a third party doing this needs assessment, that if they see questions in regards to clarification on issues, that's in statute, that's something we have to address as a risk, and that it warrants specifying in the needs assessment that those issues need to be addressed, regardless of who's calling for those.
I don't disagree with that. It's just that statement, we've been told, comes from the Secretary of State. So do the clerks want to have a statement to the counter, or is there any?
It's an opinion of the. This is a report on behalf of the commission. So yes, if we need to investigate weaknesses and then decide collectively on if there needs to be a fix and what it is. But right, to put out a statement to the public saying the legislation was fundamentally flawed or in conflict with itself.
I'm not finding it. Where exactly does it say that what I'm seeing is the division's task includes identifying items to be clarified or corrected?
We did not attribute to the Secretary of State in the report.
That sentence is okay. It's the sentence before that, the one that starts several areas in the act. That's the one that's
appear to be. I think that's a third party conclusion. That's a reasonable statement, and I think it should be left in.
But he just said it wasn't a third party conclusion. It was the conclusion of the Secretary.
So
he adopted.
Who wrote the summary?
But he told us just now that he got that from the Secretary.
Well, if the clerks want to go on record that there are no contradictions in the bill and there are no flaws, that's fine.
I don't see how this became a conflict between the clerks and the Secretary.
Well, they were suggesting that there be language by the clerks.
I'm not sure that's the counter to what that is. I think it's just the opinion of the commission on that. As with most legislation, we need to continue to review it.
And I agree several areas appear to be vague or in conflict. I don't attribute it to either side or another. I don't think this is a battlefield. I think it's trying to flesh out where the weaknesses are in implementing this legislation, just from an implementation perspective. I'd like some clarity on some of these issues, and I do think it's going to take legislative changes.
Well, and maybe perhaps we save that for when we look at the rules and we understand what those areas are, as opposed to putting in a vague and unclear statement in our commission report. On that same note, I mean, it doesn't point to any of them. It doesn't talk about it. It's one of those I mean, like with a bill of this size, there's going to be discussion on how it gets implemented, and that's the whole reason this commission was formed. So,
right. I mean, I think if we were to cut that sentence but maintain the final sentence, we still are expressing a desire for rulemaking, which I don't think anyone opposes, but we're not drawing premature conclusions that don't have any factual basis, at least for this commission.
Well, then there's really no reason for rulemaking. I mean, that's the point of the rulemaking, is to fix and clarify issues that are in conflict. So it's either one or the other.
I don't think I'm doing my duty to you, the commission, without bringing at least that opinion, qualifying it as such, as a qualification by the secretary, to your attention. I'll be glad to include opposing opinions and cite those appropriately, but this is something that needs to be addressed.
This is Cindy Ickery. I would expect that a third party conducting this type of needs assessment would identify the areas that have been unclear or have created contradictions from your perspective and identify those specifically in your report.
We did not do an analysis of the bill, and we are not attorneys, so I'm not really comfortable going through and itemizing those conflicts. I think there is a theory, at least, that there are conflicts that need to be addressed.
And I would say the only part with the needs assessment is, are those conflicts impacting decisions to be made about SCORE and the technology? And if so, then they should be identified. If they're policy discussions, that's the point of this commission, is to look at those issues and talk about what was the intent, what's been implemented, and it sounds like that will be part of when we see the rules and areas, that will be the conversation. But if there is something specific to the implementation from a SCORE technology standpoint, then those should be identified. If not, or maybe it's speaking to why this needs to be resolved in order for this type of needs assessment, because it's about SCORE. Do decisions need to be made? Is that what this is trying to say, because there's conflict?
This is Cindy Ickery. And it appears to me, just from our discussions today on deadlines or interpreting the statute, whether or not the deadlines were specific or flexible, and other things that we've talked about, that there are some that are changes that are relevant or clarifications that are relevant to SCORE and update technology updates that would be pertinent to this assessment. And
We agreed on a methodology that we would interview a selection of county staff and Department of State staff, and we review documents and the law. This is a perspective that we gained in those interviews and conversation with the Department of State staff. We also had interviews with the counties, and we didn't receive anything that suggested this was incorrect. It is a perception that is out there, at least, and that much is a fact.
In that regard, I think you're doing your job.
Well, it seems to me we don't have much consensus on this point.
No, so we could vote it in or out. Just call for a vote. Which sentence is it? Which paragraph?
It is the third complete paragraph on page 7, and within that, I believe it's the second sentence.
Okay.
Or for the record, I guess it is the sentence that specifically states, several areas in the Act appear to be vague or in conflict with each other.
Okay, so all those in favor of leaving the sentence in, let's just take a hand vote and then a vote over the phone. All those in favor, aye, leaving it in. We have 3 here, 4 here. Over the phone, can we say aye if you're in favor of leaving it in? Okay.
Bob Rankin, aye.
All right, so that's 5. All those opposed. We can have a hand raise here. 1, 2, 3, one, two, three, four, five, and over the phone. All those in favor of removing it? Anyone on the phone in favor of removing it? Who else is on the phone?
This vent. I'm sorry, I had it on mute. So I'm in favor of removing it?
Yes. Is that your vote?
Yes.
Okay, then removing it passes 6-5, so it'll be removed.
Okay.
And Stephen, did you get the names on the votes?
Yes.
Did you record?
Okay. Yeah,
thanks. Okay. Anything else anyone wants to do on that section?
I have a comment on the security issue, which is page 8, second paragraph. I think that it's a multiple steps listed there. It indicates quite a bit of work. I don't see anything in the fiscal note. It is a comment for Trevor. Do we have coverage to a security analysis?
Mr. Rankin, I'm sorry, the security analysis, are you in paragraph 2 of page 8?
Correct, yeah, that'd be an extensive task.
Sure, so again, this is Trevor Timmons. So we do vulnerability assessments of the centralized score infrastructure. We do require that county users actually sign authorized use policies. We do not do vulnerability assessments of county endpoints, say, for example, the PC that a county user is using to access the score system. We do make sure that the centralized system itself is as protected as we can make it. In this specific section, I believe we're talking about security standards applicable with respect to access to score and use of the centralized system. And so on that side, I would say, yes, we are prepared to do that, but we are not prepared to go out and do security audits of individual county service center locations. We don't do that. We have never done that in the past, and I wouldn't anticipate that we would move into that as a new area under the new law. Is that responsive to your question, sir?
It is, except that the last sentence says, which these standards are applicable and blah, 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 require policy decisions. So, you know, if we've already made that policy decision, we should not be stating in this report that they're required.
And basically, Representative, our position is you're doing a fundamental change score system. It is going to use a very different interface from the Citrix module. It's going to have more points of contact out there. In reviewing the applicable security standards, we found that the Secretary of State has voluntarily adopted the state standards, even though they're not required to. It's very easy to make a assumption that those state standards apply down to all users of the system. So the policy decision that needs to be made is, where is that boundary? At what point do the counties become responsible for the security, and the counties would then apply whatever standard was applicable to them?
Excellent question, important one. Are we on track to make that policy decision?
So I have a question for you, Mr. Kravitz. Is this related to the system going forward in 2014? We already have early voting locations that we have to submit our security plans for, so I'm just trying to make the distinction of, is there something being specifically recommended? Has that been reviewed? I mean, we already submit that. And or is this when we go to the new system, with it being web-based?
what we're recommending is basically looking at that, analyzing it, and making a decision.
Looking at that being?
The whole question of what security standards are applicable to the VSPCs, and you know what standards are applicable and who's responsible for enforcing those standards.
And so what you're, we're not that's saying the recommendation it should be. That it should be looked at, not that
yes,
you have looked recommend, at it.
The recommendation is to look at it. And it may be when you look at it that you will find that the standards that were applied in the past aren't quite appropriate, or you may find they are. All we're saying, I mean, basically we found nothing in the documentation that we reviewed that gave a clear delineation as to where the system boundary the Department of State is responsible for ends, and basically wherever that ends, under their current adoption of the state standards, those standards are applicable to everything in that boundary. Now, probably logging credentials, access issues by users in the counties, and the standards for that is going to be within that system boundary. But that's kind of the issue, is just making sure there is a clear policy decision that everyone understands, doing any analysis is necessary to make it.
This is Rick Matsumoto. Trevor earlier referred to the CBMS system, which I have a little bit of familiarity with, and that also is the same kind of system that we'd be going to in terms of how we would secure it. And I know during the implementation of that system, most of the counties have their own security policies, mm-hmm. and it depends on the level of support that you're getting from the state. So I believe there are 2, 3, 4 different classifications of counties based on whether or not you are purchasing your own end-user computers, whether or not you are putting the software on those systems, whether or not you have staff to support them, whether or not you're refreshing them on a specific cycle. And those things factor into whether or not, at least from our perspective at OIT, whether or not what level of security auditing we provide. But I believe that's all you're going to find, that most of those issues have already been addressed because they needed to be addressed for the CDMS system already.
And also, Representative, we're not saying that you need to have a major consulting company come in and do, you know, a multi-million-dollar security assessment. We're thinking more like the chief information officer of the agency. The information system security professional, if they have one on staff, sit down and look at this issue. Look to see where the current defined system boundary is. Look to see if they have procedures that are in compliance with the standards they've adopted that cover those.
I have a question. Does it matter if we're on Citrix or on a system similar, like a web-based application similar to the CBMS program, to your response, or is it?
To me, it matters in very minor ways. So it changes sort of the login policies that you may have around using Citrix, what computers you can use Citrix from, as an example. Mm-hmm. But the same security principles would still apply in terms of the strength of your password, how often it has to change, that kind of stuff.
So maybe it'd be worth us just putting that on an agenda.
Now, Bob Rank, again, I'm so concerned that last sentence opens up a task, you know, a fairly task, and if we already have some of the answers to, you know, how we're going to approach the boundary, I mean, can we be a little more explicit in what we're recommending here rather than leaving it so open?
I can try. I mean, the point of this is you need to look at this issue, and how you look at it, what you have to do in response to what you find as you look at it. you know, is open. But, yeah, I mean, ultimately you want to be sure that access to score, you know, regardless of whether it's under security control of the county or the state, that you have appropriate training, procedures, and continued monitoring. Those are basic. And we're not saying that that training, procedures, and monitoring isn't in place. We're saying for this system, you need to look at all that and see if there's anything that needs to be changed.
Well, then we should ask the question of who's responsible for doing this work and what's the timeline?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, we're trying to point out issues that need to be addressed, not tell you how to address them.
This is Rick Matsumoto. So I guess what I can do is we will check to see what standards we ask the counties to meet for the CBMS system, and I can report back on the status there.
Yeah, Bob Rankin again. I guess I'd be happy to just leave the statement as it is if, based on getting a report on security and maybe one of our next sessions.
I would second that to add it to the agenda so that we review what do we currently do and is that adequate, and then I guess who decides that's adequate or not, but I think that at least for the commission to know what the current practices are and how our current security policy works and what we're required to submit as far as that goes would be great. Add it to the business practice group discussion.
Good.
All right. Anything else on 2013?
So, yeah, I had a couple of other things. The paragraph, it's the third paragraph on page 8, that describes the different processes that need to be modified. It seems like it would be helpful to separate the ones that are new functions versus existing functions because they're kind of interspersed, and some of them really are minor modifications and others are new processes. So it seems like if we could split that up into two sentences just to distinguish between those two types of categories, that would be helpful.
Okay.
Do you have something else? Do you say a couple?
Yep. So the following paragraph that talks about the permanent mail-in voting data, it says that it's removed from SCORE, and I guess this is more of a question. Is it that the data is removed or that the permanent mail-in voting list ceases to be used? Because I read it, and I was imagining that voters who were on that list, that, like, their records would somehow be changed. Is that actually what's contemplated, or is it just that that list goes away because everyone becomes a mail voter by default?
What we're trying to say is that process right now is outside of SCORE, as we understand it.
Could you clarify
basically
that?
The secretary gets a match and sends the data of those matches to the counties. The counties work them, and as they work them, they make the changes on SCORE.
Just so long as we're still assured, in a previous meeting, the Secretary of State's office assured us that when they took the system off, down, altered it, removed IFTV as a status, they would still be marked that that voter used to be IFTV.
Is that what you're asking?
Well, this is the permanent mail category, but I mean, I think it's the same question. I was just curious. The way it said removed the data from SCORE, I just wasn't sure what that meant. And maybe that's a Trevor question, or
we don't want that removed.
What does it mean? Yeah, what does it mean to remove the data from SCORE? I mean, I understand we don't have a permanent mail-in.
Sure. Again, this is Trevor Timmons. So my guess is that Mr. Kraft and his team, they're capturing the fact that permanent mail-in voter status no longer applies. Just as with transferring changing the status of voters from inactive, failed to vote, but active, but still noting that they haven't participated in elections for, you know, however many. The information that is preserved will remain the same. So there would probably be audit log entries indicating this person had signed up and was a permanent mail-in voter, even though their status, you know, day forward would just be that they're an active registrant who is also receiving ballots by mail, as everyone will.
Right. So the category is eliminated in SCORE, but the voter history or the indication of how what that voter's history was will still be reflected in some way through an
audit log. Yeah, I mean, that would be
whatever.
The standard practice. I can't speak to exactly how his interviews, their interviews were collected here, but I mean, our practice is not to eliminate information, but to preserve an audit log of how changes are made and when and why. And so I'd imagine that that's the essence of what is being captured here.
Okay. All right, I think just a couple more. Page 9, the third paragraph, there's a discussion of compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, and there's a reference to being there no indication that any of the existing facilities are out of compliance. My understanding is that isn't entirely accurate, and I don't know if Lisa Duran or Faith Gross were part of those interviews, but I know Faith is here today. I think it'd be helpful to get her insight into this, because my understanding is that it is an ongoing issue, making sure that facilities are compliant.
Did you want to take
Faith,
public comment?
Yeah, can we have Faith come up and respond to this paragraph?
Faith Gross from the Legal Center for People with Disabilities and Older People, and I coordinate our statewide voting accessibility program authorized under the Help America Vote Act. I can tell you I have been in all 64 counties over the last 9 or 10 years, visiting polling places during elections, during early voting, and also when elections are not occurring. And we are not 100% compliant by any means. Lisa Duran, who is the accessibility coordinator here in the Secretary of State's office, and I travel together often to visit these sites. We're planning some travel this summer to some of the counties. We have been prioritizing county clerk's offices because there is so much, has historically been so much voting by mail, and we're a long way from 100% ADA compliance. So I'm not sure where this information came from, but I'm guessing, well, frankly, if I was a county clerk, I don't think I would volunteer in a survey that I know that my sites are not ADA compliant, since that is a requirement. So I don't know if Lisa was contacted and interviewed as part of this survey, but I suspect that she would tell you that, no, we are not 100% compliant. We've improved. For the record, we have definitely made a lot of improvement. Things are much better than they were in 2004 when I began doing this work, but we still have a ways to go.
Thanks. And then I guess just to follow up, looking at how it's characterized in the report, do you have thoughts on how we should talk about the issue of accessibility based on the surveys you've done and the shift from polling places in many counties to voter service and polling centers, the impacts or special concerns that should be taken into account as we implement the new law that would be helpful to have as part of this?
It's my understanding that there is going to be some rulemaking around this, but we did the requirement was strengthened from the discretion of the secretary in terms of what constitutes accessibility to the current ADA standards for accessible design or the current federal ADA requirements. So we have in statute good, strong language. We have fewer polling places to bring into compliance. So I'm optimistic that we'll get better compliance. I think we just have to wait and see. There is a pool of federal funds that the secretary can draw down upon for a couple more years to assist the counties in bringing their facilities into full compliance.
So do y'all want to strike the sentence, or do you want to have new language, or what do you want to do with that?
I think we could modify it, but there were a couple of other places where we were going to make some changes and track changes and circulate them, so maybe we just flag this one as well.
Okay. Anything else on that section? All right, on to 14.
This is Elena. So the same comment I had on the description of needs for 2013, I think it would be helpful for 2014 as well to break out the existing functions versus the new functions so it's clear what requires an entirely new process versus those that are already being done in some way and just need to be modified.
Can you do that, Paul? Are you there, Paul? Not on the phone anymore. Did we lose him?
I hope we didn't lose the conference call. It may have happened.
When you lowered the thing on me? Hung up at the same time. Do we have anyone on the phone anymore? We've lost them all. Okay. Let's just take a 5-minute break.
I blame the new system.
Did you get Leanne's?
It turns off automatically if you don't do anything with it for like an hour.
Trevor, that's annoying.
It says the Aspen room is using the phone, but...
I'll just see if you can get them back in.
I'm trying to interpret this here. I read it once when I went and fed my meter, so.
I think it's...
It's what we just talked about. She didn't talk about this thing. More systematic. That's because we... And that's right. How I have seen it.
Welcome to CenturyLink Conferencing.
It's like when you read it. I think it's okay.
Yeah.
Please hold while I confirm your passcode. Thank you. Your passcode is confirmed. When you hear the tone, you will be the fourth person to join the meeting.
Sorry about that, folks. We're on a 5-minute break. We just got dropped off the conference call momentarily, so we'll be back in 5 minutes.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Yeah, Mr.
Hello. Who's there?
Hi, this is Steve Ward. We got dropped off the conference call briefly there. I apologize for that. We're back. It'll be about 5 minutes. We're taking a 5-minute break.
Okay. I will go ahead and take a break.
You know, these IT guys, they install all this new equipment.
Let's up there if you want it, to figure out how to get it.
Is anybody else still on the phone?
Yeah, we're still here. We're preparing to resume.
Okay.
So let's go.
All right, we have everyone back on the phone, and we're on the needs for 2014. I think someone had a question for Paul Kraft, and I'm not sure. I think we lost Paul, so.
Yeah, I'm here, and I haven't heard any pages. I can also, unless you didn't have any other.
I don't remember. Okay, Elena.
So, hi, Mr. Kraft. It's Elena again. I don't know when we lost you. I was talking about page 10, how similar to page 8, it would be helpful to break out the existing functions versus new functions. And we weren't sure if that was something that you could do or if you'd like us to take a crack at that.
We could do it. I think people who do it are going to, more accurately, we're doing it based on options of those we've.
Are you there, Paul?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Can you break those out as we discussed before into the new major processes and the ones that are pre-existing? Is that the question, or the ones that are not?
Yeah.
Yes, I think we can.
Okay. Anything else?
So at the top of page 11, there's a discussion about enforcing their state residency deadline. And this might be, a question for the Secretary of State staff, but how does that work now where there's a different deadline for registration versus residency, the 30 versus 29 days? Is that something that's currently tracked, and is there a need going forward to do that through SCORE versus the way it's done now?
You want to? Okay. It has been a Trevor question, but we'll let Judd answer it.
So this is more properly a Trevor question, but in the absence of Trevor. Currently, under state law, there's a 22-day requirement for residency and a 29-day requirement for voter registration. So if you've registered to vote 29 days prior to an election, we assumed residency because the 22 would fall within the 29. So it was not a data point that we had to keep. Going forward, however, it will be something we'll have to keep because the residency will fall outside of the voter registration deadline. So you could register on the day of an election, but we would not know whether or not you had been a resident in the state or in the county jurisdiction, whatever the appropriate election is within those 22 days.
I'm sorry. I thought the previous residency requirement was 30 days. And I'm looking at the bill, but I thought prior to 1303 it was 30 days versus 29. Is that, and you said 22. I'm just going to make sure I understand.
It's 22 days. Now, there may be circumstances under which 30 days is the more appropriate number, like for a particular kind of election. But for our election purposes, it was 22 days for a state election.
I thought it was 30.
I think it's 22.
Yeah, I think they moved it to 22.
I'm surprised by the looks on everybody's faces as they respond. Really?
Maybe I'm describing what the new law is. See, this is
you're
why you should have Trevor
the new
answer
this. That's why it's a Trevor question.
This is why it's a Trevor question.
As Trevor described it was 30 days. We always assumed residency because it was 29 days.
Yeah.
Now
that
we're
true.
Moving to
that
22, there will be that week lag, and so Trevor feels that we need to start tracking that. It becomes an important number in SCORE, where it was not before.
That's right.
So we didn't used to track the day, but now that it's a week.
Now we have to. Yeah.
There's a belief that we need to. Okay.
Right. And then there are some issues with the differing days for coordinated elections, but those aren't going to be statewide. But there are different residency days for cities and
special districts.
So for coordinated ballots, it creates some problems for clerks that coordinate. But
Sorry. I want to follow up on that because I'm not sure I understand how you go about tracking it. Mm-hmm. Do you know how you go about tracking state residency and SCORE?
Well, we don't right now. So
yeah, right now we
have
nothing to offer on that point.
So you will add a field, and then how do you determine that I'm a resident?
Well, you'll affirm it.
Yeah,
okay,
it'll be an affirmation that you, I mean, you're trying to vote for a particular, you're trying to get a ballot for a particular race, and so you'll have to affirm that you were a resident that was appropriate for that race on the time in which you try to acquire the ballot, so.
Okay, so.
Or when you register.
Okay, so that's so for all those people that are presently registered, they would be automatically, the field would
automatically,
be.
Automatically, yep.
Then you're saying that there would be a separate...
Well, they would have to... So let's say that you were registering to vote on the day of the election, and the particular race requires, you know, to get this ballot style, you have to affirm to these elements, and to get this ballot style, you'd have to affirm to these elements. Well, so we'll have to ask you, are you, you know, appropriate for this particular ballot style? Do you live in this precinct or this location or this county? And all of that will be in the information that you include on your registration form. And then you'll affirm at the bottom, and you'll be done. So we still have to keep track, though, of that date, because that date is, you know, a date that now is important. So you'll have... We'll have some way in which you'll get to describe when you move to that location so that we know that it happened within or outside of 22 days prior to that election.
Well, won't it just be part of the affirmation like it is now?
It could be, although there might be a circumstance where you wouldn't want to vote that ballot. I mean, there may be a circumstance where on election day you walked in and said, you know, yeah, I live here now, but I only moved there in the last week, but... So I really want to be more appropriately, you know, categorized as being a member of this other jurisdiction so that you can vote that other ballot. So there may be circumstances where you don't want to be in the jurisdiction or you're not appropriately issued that ballot. So, and I'm not exactly sure how we're handling that. So, again, these are all Trevor questions. Trevor.
Okay, I have one more question, which I think might be a you question.
Good.
The national change of address process that's described in the report, there was an issue flagged about the data and residential versus mailing addresses and temporary address changes.
Yeah.
And it said that it should be contemplated, you know, getting that additional data. Could you speak to that and kind of what the plans are?
So the in 2012, we sent out postcards to 760,000 people inviting them to register to vote. when we sent out those postcards, we sent to their residential address because we were trying to find them. You know, we didn't have their mailing address because in the Department of Revenue, all they had was the residential address. So we sent their postcards to where we thought we could find them. And then when we did NCOA later on in that election cycle, the IDS, which was our vendor, used the query setup that we had, which was to send to residential address instead of to mailing addresses. We have subsequently fixed that. It now goes to mailing addresses. So that shouldn't be a problem going forward.
And likewise, there's a reference to temporary address changes. Has that been resolved as well?
Yes, again, that's the same kind of issue, but yeah, that's no longer going to be a problem. In fact, it was only a problem for one rotation of the NCOA data, so now we're clean.
And we're going to need to get some. Our understanding was you were doing notifications for NCOA that did not reflect.
So I missed all that, Paul. Could you repeat that?
Yeah, our understanding was current contractor is providing you with, with address changes, not specific as to whether those are residential, mailing, or temporary. And that the counties would like to know which of those three are changed.
You know,
particularly a ballot election where a voter who has a temporary address change, he's for 6 weeks somewhere or something, it is mail.
So, I'm sorry, Paul. There, you're about every third word was gone, and we were not catching. And I just didn't get enough of it to be able to answer the question. But I mean, maybe I can speak to you offline, or if it's a point for me, or if it's a point for the commissioners, maybe you can write it down or something and send it.
Okay, let me try it again. Is this better?
It does seem to be better.
Okay, I moved to a different phone. Okay, our understanding was that the NCOA data that's coming from the state's current contractor does not differentiate between residential address changes, mailing address changes, and temporary, and that the counties feel having those three data sets would be more valuable, and a couple counties are using their own contractors that apparently provide them with that information. So
that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. Let me follow up and ask Hillary Rudy in our office, who would know the answer.
Okay. And I guess our point is, yeah, that's something that needs to be explored. If we can improve the usability of the data coming from the NCOA process, and that's good.
Anything else on 2014? No. So, Paul, how long would it take you to get some of the changes that we've suggested? Is there any way we could get drafts out on that tomorrow, the 3rd at the latest?
I don't know if tomorrow or even the 3rd is realistic. We can do what we can do and get back with you. Some of these things I'm going to need to do, I think, some additional research. But I will be glad to give you all a draft on the 3rd, say midday on the 3rd of what we've got.
Okay. If we could get a draft on midday of the 3rd, I think we'd like to get this posted. Is that what I heard for comment? Or we could post it today.
Well, actually, we were hoping to get comments from this meeting by this Friday.
By this Friday? Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then we were planning to have the second draft of this to you for your next meeting on Monday, leaving us a week before your deadline with legislature for yet a third draft.
Okay. Well, you have some of our comments. Do the commissioners just want to make any other written comments? Just send them through Stephen so he can get them posted and then off to Kraft. And then did I hear you want this posted online for public comment? Is that now or is that on the 8th?
Who, me?
No, I'm talking to the commission, sorry.
Oh, okay.
I think we were talking about getting public comment on the business plan, but
oh, okay.
I think the second draft posting that and inviting comment before the 15th, that makes sense as well, but maybe on the next draft.
On the next draft. Okay. So we'll get comments back to you, Paul, by Friday then, and we'll expect a new draft on Monday?
Correct. Now, do you still want a draft on Wednesday of whatever we've got?
No, that's okay.
Okay.
Just go ahead and
yeah, if y'all can give me everything you've got by the Friday, we will go ahead and start putting in the changes from these conversations.
Okay.
We're going to have to obviously go back and listen.
Okay, great. All right, then I think that's it on this agenda item, which then takes us to the UVS survey questions. Did anybody have a chance to get us comments on those?
Friday. We will go ahead and start. Okay, I lost y'all for a minute.
It sounds like somebody's dialed into the conference call and is also listening online. So if you're listening online and you're in the conference, could you please pick one?
I'm online, Bob Rankin. But I lost it and came had to redial.
Oh, okay.
Okay, is there anything else for me?
No, I don't think so. Anything else for Mr. Kraft? No? All right.
All right. I'll be listening if y'all want me to rejoin.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks.
Go ahead.
So this is Martha. On the next item, the UVS survey questions, I thought we were going to hear back from what was contemplated coming out of their meeting.
Okay, I don't think they met.
Did they meet?
No, they were at the clerk's conference last week.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So you want to push that to the next?
Let's.
Yeah.
And was the survey supposed to go out before? No, but it was supposed
no.
to be finalized at their meeting.
Right. So let's move this to the 15th then?
Well, if we want input into the questions, they have to be before the 11th. Right.
Right. We gave some input last time. If you want any more input.
So let's put it on the agenda again for next week.
Okay.
Unless it sounds like, does anybody have anything for today?
Well, I was just going to add what would be helpful is to have in our packet, I know it's more work, but thanks, is just a reminder of what it was and what our input was.
Oh, okay.
If that exists.
The input from the, I think Al has it.
I think there was here's what was last week, the public participation panel, and they were providing some additional input. So what might be helpful is to find out if, not necessarily every input that they offered, but what got into the survey.
Okay, well, let's invite Al back to the next meeting, and then he'll give us the backup of where we are before the meeting. Can you do that, Steve?
Yes.
Just let Al know, and he'll bring us the information prior to. Okay. That takes us to the status report on business practices subgroup.
We are meeting on, the first meeting is actually going to be on Wednesday.
Is your mic on?
Yes.
Oh, it's not. Sorry. But now it's glowing. The first meeting is on Wednesday from 1 to 3. And we'll be reviewing the models that were outlined at the clerk's conference, discussing what the next steps are. I also made a note for us to look at what we do for security practices, and we'll plan on having a preliminary report to you all that I'll do on the 8th, and then we'll have the group here on the 15th is what I had asked for, and maybe we'll know when we go to lining and what our future agendas are. We have members who won't be here on the 3rd, and I'd like them to have a chance to weigh in before we make our recommendation, the final one.
Okay. All right, so we can put that on the agenda for the 8th. And that'll be a presentation?
So for the 8th, it will be a draft of what it is, and I'll be bringing that. And then the 15th okay. is when we'd like to actually present. And I'll also send out what we've done. Some members had asked what had the scoreboard previously done, and I'll send out from the... We'll discuss that on the 3rd of what we want to make sure you all have, and we'll send that out ahead of time. But then really the discussion about those materials would be for the 15th, but I'll get it to you in time for the meeting.
Okay. And then
on the 8th.
Okay. And then we had discussed the commission's second report due September 2nd. So I think one of the action items we were considering taking today was whether we were going to retain an outside consultant or whether you all want to think about that another week or what direction you want to go to get that report prepared for the second.
This is Martha. My inclination on that is that we should go out for bids again and see what we get.
Don't we have an issue with being to be able to go out?
We didn't get that all. Is that Representative Rankin?
Yeah, I remember that we had an issue of timing, whether or not we had to actually go out for bids again.
Well, we can't go out for a bid. We could go out for a document quote.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Which would be another... which would only have to be a 3-day turnaround. What we'd need is the commission to agree on what it is that we want in that report, and then we could put that up online and see if we get any other requests for back on the document quote and then review those. I think the timeline issue is that we'd have to be doing that in tandem. For instance, we really would need the... I think we would need the proposal and what the commission wants by next week so that we could then post it and then have time to review what we get back, perhaps on the 15th, in order to determine the commission's preference on a provider. Because, again, we'd only have 6 weeks after that.
But we had an option to just go with Kraft again?
Yeah, we would have an option to do that, and then I think we're about that. I mean, I'm sure Kraft would also submit. But
right, that's my thing, is that Kraft would submit, but we really didn't have any choices the first go-around for reasons beyond our control. So I think that as a commission we should... find out what else is out there. We still might decide on Kraft.
And they may not.
They might decide.
I don't think we've had that conversation with them, frankly.
We're going to expedite this process and try to get out a document that's reasonably thought through in this short of time period. Do we currently have a list of system requirements that we can, as commissioners, can look at to prepare our questions that we want to see in that document, our requirements?
Well, I don't think we do. I think the scope of the report would be, I don't remember how that reads in the statute, but it's essentially what do they have now and what needs do they anticipate, sort of a gap.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
Analysis.
What is the current system requirements that they're using now, on the or definition of the system they're using now, so that I can look at it to see what I want a technical company to be able to address in meeting the obligations of the statute.
I think some of it's in some of the UVS documents we got from Al that kind of went through the county survey. It just tells us what they have, not necessarily what they're using, but I think that's probably the closest thing we have.
And I think what they're using was going to go out in the survey. Because we have what they have. We have inventory. But that doesn't necessarily tell us what they're using. Many have inventory that is just surplus that they don't use.
my thought is that some part of this next assessment is going to require a list, since a lot of these counties are using different equipment, especially with their ballot printing and some of those pieces, that we really need to know what the inventory is currently.
Well, you should have the inventory. That was in one of the documents that, and we can put that out again, but that was in one of the documents that we got from Al when he came to present about UVS. So we do have a little bit more information in this round, but we haven't sent out that second survey yet, which I think would address, or we're hoping would include questions we need for our report. Yeah, so that it's kind of a combination survey. So to the extent we decide what we need to know, I think that's a question we would have to ask in that survey. And then perhaps that's something that we want a independent party doing interviews, much like we did this round. So I guess we could prepare what we think the report should look like, but I just, you know, if the commission has a better idea, we, you know, we're fine going with what the commission wants to put in a report.
Can I make a suggestion that the secretary put together a draft that the commission could then look at on Monday and we could finalize it?
I guess we should have Al back. I don't know if that's going to happen by Monday. But.
unfortunately, this week is a short week, so I don't know if that's realistic. The other issue is that Al is not a member of my staff.
He's right. Contractor.
Contractor. And so Al can take time off and not be subject to my, hey, no, he can't do that.
So, in other words, you don't have control.
So he may already have plans.
Well, what if we look into those, if we get an answer to that question, and then if Monday is too soon, then Monday's just too soon. I don't see another way for us to come up with a tool on our own with no guidance, and then if it's something we can respond to, that'd be great. And if it's not Monday, then it's just as quickly as we possibly can, right?
Yes.
I've been listening.
Yes. All right. So, hi, Al. So the next, the report that's due out July 2nd, I know you'd done some initials looking at what you thought that report was going to entail.
You mean September
2nd? Yeah. Would you have an ability at some point over the next week or week and a half to put together something that we could use to put out a document quote to request bids for an independent needs assessment?
Madam Chair, Al Davidson, UVS project lead. Yes, my other presentation was primarily to say what had been done to this point. I can use that information to try to put together a draft for you, certainly.
If we could get a draft, and I don't know if you saw the last document quote draft.
I can find
it. I think it was a 3 or 4 page. Yeah, if you can just work with Trevor to put together a document quote that we could then have reviewed by the commission. What's your schedule? I guess that was our question. You're obviously off the 4th. Are you out the 5th?
I was planning on.
Okay.
Yes.
So Monday's probably early then.
I'll do my best.
Okay. If we can get it Monday, that's great.
Okay.
If not,
it may not be in as final a form as you might like to see it. But
even a rough draft would be wonderful. Because you did your last presentation. I think Martha touched on. I mean, really had a lot of the stuff that we need to be looking at for that September 2nd report.
So right.
Whatever you can put together.
I shall have something for you.
Okay, and then I think we had that we were going to ask you to come back on the 8th and just talk to us about the survey again. I don't know what you got out of the public participation, but in terms of us trying to finalize what we want in the survey so it matches what we're going to put in the document quote and all that goes together so that when you go back to the UVS committee, you could maybe discuss what some of our needs are. Would you be available to come back next Monday?
Yes, I can certainly do that. And as a matter of fact, we sent some information to the chair of the advisory committee just today. They accepted your recommendation from last time that you take out the what kind of equipment would have you used under the old model.
Okay.
So they did that, and they added another question that was discussed by the public participation panel. I can discuss all that with you Monday if you'd like.
That'd be perfect.
All
thank
right.
you.
Thank
right.
you.
Anything else for Al? No?
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
thanks.
You.
All right, so we'll have that. I guess that takes us to our next item, which is setting the agenda for the 8th. So we'll have Al back. We'll have a draft of the business practice subgroup. We could have a rules presentation if the commission's interested in hearing that. Okay. It'll be very general. I think mostly the categories. It won't be a draft of the rules yet, but... Yeah, and then we'll have craft again. Okay. Okay, and then I think we're back in here. Is that right, Steve?
I had a...
Okay.
Sorry, just to add to the agenda. We spoke a bit in past meetings about the filters for the NCOA match. Kind of going over the timeline and this match coming up in July, I was wondering if you would be willing, because you said we could do that publicly, we could go through it in some way. Is there a way to incorporate that into next week's meeting? Just sort of explaining where we're at, or maybe an offline conversation, or somehow more quickly than pushing it out down the line, getting that, having an understanding of that.
The thing that you're interested in, what address is it?
Yeah, it's the... I mean, across the board, basically the balance between, you know, catching a lot of people but maybe making some more mistakes, or
right.
catching fewer people but being very accurate.
So the filters.
Yes.
Okay. I see no reason why we couldn't have that solution.
Okay.
I'll ask either Hillary or Vicki would be the right person, so I'll get together with the right person to make sure they
got
it. Okay. So, Steve, that'll be NCOA filters. Okay, and we're back in here at 1 o'clock. And then I wanted to just bring up for the Commission's consideration that there is this statute 243.5101, which encourages us as a state body to, or a state commission established by law, to hold one-third of our meetings outside the Denver metro area. So I think it might be a good idea if at some point we start scheduling so that we can take public comment elsewhere and move around a little bit. I was hoping for day trips so we don't have to spend the night, but perhaps we could go out to the western slope as far as we can get in time to get back. So anyway, just
you're all welcome to Carbondale anytime.
Yeah, we'll put Carbondale on the list.
Can
we'll
we
put Pueblo on the
list. I'm definitely all for Carbondale. So. Love Carbondale.
We got two, Carbondale and Pueblo. So we'll definitely do those two. And then we'll think about some of the other locations that we could do in a day. So, okay. I don't have anything else unless anyone on the commission has anything. No? All right, then we're adjourned.